Hello, this is Mark Knights talking about commodities and consumers in Georgian Britain. And today's lecture will try and link consumer behaviour in 18th century Britain to some of the themes that we've already been exploring in terms of the commercial society being driven by companies like the East India Company that we were looking at last week. Trying to place the commodities in their global and colonial context that we were looking at the end of last term, but also to look at some of the manners and codes of behaviour within Britain and how they shaped British society and culture. And I want to take a theme that was really brought to historical attention by the publication in 1982 of Neil McKendrick and others, The Birth of a Consumer Society, which suggested that there had been a consumer revolution preceding and accompanying the Industrial Revolution of the 18th century. And we might think about various ways of questioning how far there was that consumer revolution, that is to say, how far it was a rupture with what had gone on in the 16th and 17th century, but also think about how to explain the undoubted growth of consumer goods that were available in the 18th century and the possession of those across social classes. And there have been a variety of different explanations for the growth of consumer behaviour in the 18th and early 19th century, stressing the thrill of possession and the appeal of consumer items to different types of characters, but also looking at the new economic framework within which consumer behaviour has to be seen, new credit systems, new investment systems, a diversification of trade and manufacturing, and the creation of a commercial as much as a landed society, as well as changes within the household, the way in which the role of women and women's work changed, and how women became much more open to commercially produced goods rather than goods that they had produced from within the household in a self-sufficient manner. And there's also been a good deal of interest in notions of politeness, which are often associated with consumer behaviour. Politeness being a code, a set of informal rules really governing both language and behaviour and dress, appearance and manners. So it's a sort of all-embracing etiquette of how to behave, what to say, how to dress, how to represent yourself, how to fashion yourself for the consumption and pleasure of others in what was increasingly seen as a sociable world. We want to start really by focusing on a central debate about consumer behaviour in the 18th century, which was this consumer behaviour and the luxuries that were consumed a good thing or a bad thing? Undoubtedly, contemporaries saw a number of dangers in the prevalence of luxury. And they saw these dangers in terms of morality, but also in terms of sexual character, physical constitution, but also political constitution, and the constitution of the economy. And if we take the first of those, and the PowerPoint that accompanies this lecture has a number of slides illustrating the points that I'm about to make, there was an association between the dangers of luxury and effeminacy, a fear that excessive consumption of luxury items was effeminizing and enervating the British male character, rather worrying at a time when Britain was engaged in so many wars, and there was an anxiety that this was leading to a decay of the martial spirit. There were some stock characters, the Macaroni, who had travelled in Italy and had come back dandified and excessively interested in his appearance and male grooming. And that was a stock character that was often ridiculed in the prints. But the ridicule was also extended to women, not so much in terms of effeminizing, though an excessive femininity was sometimes one of the byproducts of the fashionable world, but really a castigation of the excesses that the pursuit of fashion could create amongst women. So there were satires of the excessive bustles that women wore in dresses, their excessive wigs, and so on. Another significant fear is the fear that the emulation by lower social orders of those with wealth and status was subverting the natural hierarchy, and that were people who were deliberately using polite and fashionable and luxurious behaviour to represent themselves in ways that hid their true self, or which hid their proper status. So there's a fear of parvenus and social climbers and upstarts, and that's again illustrated very graphically in a number of the print satires. And there is also a castigation of the ill health that excessive consumption can create. So there were a number of anxieties, really, that this was leading to bankruptcies, extravagance leading to people living beyond their means, subverting their industriousness by making them idle, or diverting money out of the country to pay for foreign imports, undermining of the landed interest. And often this associated with a fear of a decline of empire, and one thinks of Gibbon here as well, and associated with much longer sources of condemnation of vice from Christian and classical traditions. But as those graphic satires suggest, alongside the castigation of luxury, there is also a sensual fascination with it. And during the 18th century, there are increasing number of voices prepared to defend luxury. At the end of the 17th century, writers like Roger North, who see the appetites of men as being a spur to trade and to industry and to ingenuity. And these views really sort of taken on by Bernard de Mandeville in The Fable of the Bees, or his significant subtitle to that work, Private Vices, Public Benefits, of 1714, in which he questioned what luxury actually meant, arguing that there was no such fixed idea of a single luxury, that it was very much in the eye of the beholder, and that it wasn't something which should be condemned, it wasn't something which effeminated and enervated the nation, rather it was something which led to the public benefit and to public wealth. And those ideas were influential both on David Hume and Adam Smith. Hume, who argued that luxury was intimately associated with sociability, an important strand of that polite behaviour that I was talking about earlier on, and by Adam Smith, who argued that although excessive luxury was to be condemned, envy and admiration were natural passions, and that they were ones which drove an economy, and that a commercial society was the higher form of economy, and that there was a natural break in man's appetites, because in order to better oneself, the 18th century Britain had recognized that frugality was also as important as indulgence, and so there needed to be no regulation of that, because the natural passions and interests naturally led to the wealth of nations. And certainly there was a good deal of consumer items for that wealth to consume. And on the PowerPoint which accompanies the lecture, there's a large number of illustrations, many of which are taken from the Victoria and Albert Museum website, showing a variety of different consumer objects. But there are also a number of tables showing how socially extensive the possession of consumables was. Relatively humble items like saucepans, books, clocks, looking glasses, window curtains, china, utensils for hot drinks, left in wills, specified in wills, so that probate evidence gives us an insight into how consumerism was growing in the latter half of the 17th and into the early 18th century, particularly in urban centres. Particularly amongst the middling sorts who were acquiring many of the trappings of this consumer society. And the commodities that they were consuming were often colonial ones, such as tea, and there is information on the website about the falling cost of tea and therefore the proportionate increase in the consumption per capita of tea, but also other commodities like coffee and tobacco, all of which of course were consumed in the coffee houses, themselves a venue of politeness and sociability and interaction, but also commodities, particularly tea and coffee, which required significantly large amounts of sugar. And there are also facts on the PowerPoint about the increase in sugar exports from the Caribbean and the increased consumption of sugar in Britain. And of course, prefiguring what we'll look at next week, there was an intimate link between sugar production and slavery. And so, of course, the commodities that we've just been talking about are intimately bound up with the system of slavery as it developed over the course of the late 17th, early 18th century. Just two final points. One is that this consumer behavior was also interested in other global venues. China as well as Asia captured the imagination of Britons, not so much as a market, but as a source of interest, of design ideas. And there are a good deal of items of furniture and ceramics which are influenced by the mania for Chinese, chinoiserie as it was called. Finally, we might also note how this consumerism was also applied to and bound up with political culture. And there are some examples of ceramics which are politically engendered, either to celebrate, for example, the revolution of 1689, or to celebrate Robert Clive's attempt to enter Parliament in the 1750s. And then finally, a representation of the very well-fed John Bull, as opposed to the French emaciated figure in the 1790s, contrast between French slavery and British liberty. So the consumer behavior and the ideas of consumption have a cultural value that extends into the political realm. So we can see how the study of commodities in fact links across politics, economics, morality, and social and economic factors as well. So to conclude, we might point to this sort of ambivalence about the consumer society and the luxuries and consumer items that were available in the 18th century. On the one hand, there are those who continue to condemn it, but an increasingly voluble counter to that, and perhaps the dominant voice by the 19th century that acknowledged that if excess was to be condemned, that nevertheless consumer behaviour was an important part of the economy, that its negative associations might not be as disastrous as its critics suggested, and that actually luxury might be embraced.